Broadcast Network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Good evening, AfterBuzzers. We are here at the AfterBuzz TV studios discussing everything American Horror Story. I am your host for the evening, David Skiffolitti, joined by the beautiful Pega Red.
Hi, everyone.
Mary Lou Mendo.
Hello.
And James Dumont, the man himself. We are talking tonight, season 4, episode 11, Magical Thinking. And before we get into it, we are going to start with James. So lovely to have you here. Thank you for joining us. You are in the hot seat.
And I'm still alive.
And you're still alive!
That's right.
You play Foster this season, and season 3 you played Dr. Morrison.
That's correct. The obstetrician for Sarah Paulson's character.
Yes. Yeah.
She can have a try to have a baby regular, you know, but you can't do it with Coven.
You can't do that.
I was like, wait, you can't have a baby regular. You need some witchcraft, you know, something.
obviously.
Yeah, it's Coven.
And so that's what you suggested.
So
right?
Yeah, we're gonna try the regular. If it doesn't work out, maybe perhaps you can mix a little something, some snakes and things can come out, you know. It worked out pretty good.
Oh, I remember that episode very well. That was a good one.
Well, they did this thing called they had this fish. It was called the fishbowl camera, and there's this one shot where it's this long shot, it's like low to the ground, and it's really almost like a fishbowl scenario where, you know, it's like her and me, and that kind of pulls in. It was really quite fun. And then the whipping, we do a lot of whip pans in the show, so like they'd whip around to him and whip around to me, and then they went back and forth between, you know, my friend Jim was doing the other doctor where she's talking about plastic surgery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they were doing whip pans, which was really whip
which
pans
are kind of challenging. Like I've shot with that, and if you don't hit the person exactly, it's like, oh, we've got to start all over.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we were doing a lot of whip pans.
A lot of whip pans.
Back and forth and back and forth. Then the fishbowl shot. So there's like a lot of, you know, those episodes are really. Alfonso was one of the directors, and so you know there was a great style to that show, and that particular season too. And then this season's it's even more interesting. The directors are like they run the gamut, you know.
Well, do you find that the style of season 3 compared to season 4 completely different?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think the directors, like if I look at like, you know, Howie Deutsch and like Anthony Hemingway, you know, he directed some of the episodes I did of Treme, almost all my episodes of Treme. You know, there's these directors that kind of bring their kind of style of thing. And Lonnie, who directs a lot of Banshee, directed the last episode I did, which was 409. Mm-hmm. And so that one was more like we talked about, like character driven, you know, where like, you know, Chiklis is like almost hanging himself and things like that.
Right.
So there's more there's more times where I think directors have this great, or if there's time, if they make their days, you know, they have these opportunities to kind of put a little bit of their kind of style and flavor into the gumbo of the American Horror Story. But this season, I think, The diversity of the directors. I think Alfonso did the first episode, and so there was some continuity from season 3 coming over to season 4 in terms of his style.
Good for the audience.
Absolutely.
I think, yeah.
And you know, I think they also think is each of the series regulars too. I think there's always this, like, they know who their characters are, but there's new things that they're discovering too. But a director kind of comes in and brings a fresh energy and kind of, oh, well, what are we going to do this week? You know, like, I had ideas about things. So there's this beautiful collaborative kind of process. If there's time, that's the bigger issue we always kind of face, is that you know, we have Louisiana weather, you know, it was very, you know,
muggy.
It was really muggy and hot when we started the beginning of the season, and Kathy Bates is like, oh my god, had a whole tent just designated just for cold air, because it was just hot in the beard, and it's not easy, you know, and you're in full wool clothes.
Well, yeah, I love the time period.
Yeah, I love the time period. I love the suits and everything, but then you're like, wait, it's wool, and it's 94 degrees at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know?
Nothing could be worse.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. So we had those challenges, you know, and then you're trying to do your character, and you know, and Evan's got the hands to deal with, you know, and he can't pick up food, you know. So, you know, everybody had particular challenges this season that, you know, we had the weather, and then you have these, you know, lovely directors that come in and bring, you know, fresh energy to it. So right. it kind of counters all the environmental aspects, and we're in an area that was just like, you know, kind of muddy, and there were real alligators in that lake, and there's like bugs all the time. Wow. So I mean, you're really getting a sense that, you know, we felt that we were there, is we're all part of the freak show. I mean, once you're on that you know, in the tents, and you're going around, you're driving around, the Ferris wheel's all there, and you're kind of like, oh no, we're gonna be here for like 16, 18 hours. I mean, yeah. You felt like you're part of the freak show. So, right. You know, there is a, you know, that's a great testament to Ryan and keeping things kind of real and true and building that whole kind of community there. Where mm-hmm. people, you know, we were there for a long, long, long time. So I think people yeah. really get a feeling like this is their, they are part of the freak show. You know, right. We're not actors home. In a show, you know, anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you've been on, so two seasons, Coven yeah. and now this.
Yeah.
Did the set change at all from season to season? Was it clockwork? Is it...
Well, you know, there's a beautiful facility in downtown New Orleans that is like all green and amazing. So most of the inner scenes that you see, like for Coven and things like that, we shot around New Orleans. There's this really creepy, creepy place that they did a lot of shooting in season three, which was like this, you know, like it was the Navy had it for a while, but then it became like a boys' orphanage. And then it became like this kind of like, you know, so there's ghosts, and like that Ooh. Place was like beyond, like you could just do a movie just in that. It's creepy, yeah. creepy. So all those scenes that I had in season three with Coven in the doctor's office is in this like bricked facility that has like the crepe myrtle going from the trees. And like you go through there and you're like, no, there, some stuff happened.
Something went down here.
You know what I mean? Like some children were abused here, or like there's, you know, like a mental, there was something. Like
you
could
do energy.
You could have yeah. shot all of Asylum outdoors on that, you know, location.
Oh, wow.
So, and we, so the, but the offices were all kind of like dated. It was like that post-war brick, you know, Ooh. Sterile kind of environment, which is perfect for mm-hmm. what, you know, they were kind of doing. And then you have the beautiful locations of the homes that have the, you know, the big beams, and, you know, you like, you feel like you're coming up on the southern plantation, you know. Homes. So Louisiana's been a great kind of, because it has that natural backdrop, mm-hmm. you know. And then this season, you know, most of the stuff, all the stuff that was all, you know, inside the tent, that's all shot in the same kind of like soundstage where we shot other stuff. So the interiors are all kind of there, but, you know, exterior was all on, you know, on that campgrounds, you know, like wow. we're on, and we're in our own little private area. Like no one knows where it is, and they van us in and van us out. And there's like people in the neighborhood that they kind of know. And it's like, there's like four families. They're like, hey, and the van goes by. Like, it's like so it's cool. sweet because we have
they're part
this,
of the
like,
neighborhood.
Yeah,
now.
They're part of the neighborhood. Like we know they're doing that freak right. show over there. Yeah. You know, they're doing that freak show over there. So, you know, it's this beautiful kind of like this world that you kind of go into. And when you're mm-hmm. there for those long hours, you know, it's mm-hmm. so there's something interesting. And I'm hoping season five stays in Louisiana. I really do. I got a feeling that it will. And who knows what they're going to do, but yeah. there's just something about that's been like second home for a while. There's something like past lifey, mm-hmm. Shirley MacLaine-ish about that place. When you go there, you feel like you're part of some historical thing, or like things, like you say, things happened here.
Yeah, yeah. totally. You know? Like New Orleans, one of my favorite places. But like when I go there, you're just like, more has happened here than most other places.
Yeah, yeah. And you feel it, and mm-hmm. it's still kind of there because, you know, other cities have kind of like, they have a really cool thing about preserving the history of Louisiana. So some of the buildings and things, that will never change. Right. You can change the inside of it. I've seen buildings stand up where it's just the outer part of it, and all the bricks and the iron and everything stays, but then it's like some modern building on the inside. So they've been able to kind of hold and preserve the history and the culture of it. And there's so many cultures kind of going there. It's also really a young person's town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After Katrina, it's really like a lot of kids went to college and left. Now they're like, New Orleans is like a
party
hip,
town.
You know, under 30 town to be, you know? So there's that.
Oh. That's fun.
You have been around for a very long time.
I really am.
Well, you started as the Gerber baby, right? In
That's
1966?
Right. That's, yes. I was on the little jars of the Gerber baby foods.
And like, that is where your career
that's
started.
That's right. It's all over. It's the same. Yeah, so that's kind of like my mom was a interior designer. and from the Art Institute of Chicago. And so, you know, my dad was a photographer, and they're like, you know, let's put this picture in for this thing. And then they do a little sketch of you. And, you know, so then...
Was it a contest? Was it still a contest?
It's a contest then. Yeah. So, you know, the idea is, you know, you just kind of put your stuff in. And so you put a photograph in, and then someone just outlines a sketch. And then they kind of look through them like, oh, I kind of like that one, you know. And then you're the kid, you know. It's like you get your little Gerber life insurance policy. No, that's the heartbreak of it all. When I left college, I had this portfolio that had these early pictures of, like, McDonald's set commercial, all these, like, print ads as a kid. And I left it at the airport. And I've never seen it. If you're out there, please, please. You know, who... But it's been gone for a long, long time. But yeah, I'm like, they're just like irreplaceable things.
Yeah. Somebody sitting at home is just like super fan.
She's like, yeah, we're free to die. I can sell that on eBay.
Look at all of these Gerber babies.
Yeah, like, this is a creepy looking kid. Who was that? Yeah, so now, so yeah, I've been around for a bit. You know, it's one of these like, I'm a 30-year overnight sensation kind of scenario. Yeah.
I mean, you've DJed.
Yes. Like, I put in some time in the New York club scene. So if you
I mean, Studio 54.
That was, I was the last summer. And I was that's amazing. Way too young to be there. Well. I was 14. but that's a different time.
Hey, it
you
still
know,
happens today.
Oh, totally.
It does happen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you're
whatever.
Scaring me because I have a 13-year-old. So please don't tell me that
DJing.
She could be. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but the whole club scene was like, that was the last summer of Studio 54 before they moved over to Palladium.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was, you know, DJing. I was like pulling records for this really incredible DJ out of Chicago. And that was his last summer there. And I was like, okay. And I just didn't realize what it was until I was like later. And I was like, you know, that's like, there's that. Everybody's like, everybody had one name. Like, there's Halston. You know, there's Bianca. There's, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, it, you know, everybody has like one name thing. And I'm like, you know, that's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
And, the one story that I did have, which I think you'll, and I don't have it anywhere, is there was a bar back at Studio 4 the last summer, and his name was Tom, and he lived in New Jersey. And that is Tom Cruise.
It's like one name only, Tom.
At Studio 54.
You check it out. He won't admit it, but it's true.
It's true.
It's absolutely true.
He called him out.
Tom Cruise, he was living in New Jersey, and I knew because he would get a ride back to New Jersey when he was done working.
Wow.
But he was a barback.
That's a great
But there was
story.
A lot of, like, if you look at, like, Ryan Phillippe, what was that Ryan Phillippe movie?
Yeah.
There's so many people that will or will not admit that they were part of that whole kind of scene at that time, and he was one of them.
Oh my God.
Isn't that kind of cool?
That's really neat.
That's
the other one was like when we did, I did Risky Business. I was a extra in Risky Business. Mm-hmm. And one of the other extras was like Jason Gedrick, who, like, went on to do some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
But we were all, like, Chicago folks. It was, like, Cusack and me and Casey Samotsko. There was, like, you know, Alan Ruck. They were all kind of local guys who were all... And then a couple of them went off and did, like, Gross Point Blank, you know, DVD Vincentas and Lili. These are, like, people that I knew. So it was, like, there was this fun thing about being the Chicago. We were not New York. We were not L.A., But there was, like, movies coming to town. So there was this opportunity for us to kind of break out. And those guys went to L.A., and I went to New York. So, you know, you make your choices all the time. But, you know, Jeremy Piven and I went to high school together. We were same year. He was a football player. And, you know, Cusack and I, we played a little ball together into theater. So there's, like, you know, there's this interesting kind of, like, over time, you know, you see these folks. And you're like, hey, man, remember the time?
All the stories you must have.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of them.
You're like, remember that time this person got wasted?
Yeah. Of which we will not talk about anywhere.
No. Not until your memoirs, at least.
No.
When that person releases your memory book of pictures.
I want to stay in the business, so I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
You know, because you'll see them later on. You're like, hey, you know that little AfterBuzz thing you did? Yeah, I really didn't appreciate that you're telling people you're a bar back when... So, dude, telling you, I knew who you were.
I saw you.
Come on. You had no shirt on, bro. Just own it. Own it.
So you've modeled, you've acted, you've done DJing. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite? What do you enjoy the most?
Well, you know, naked modeling now is my new thing.
Because
ladies like the Chevy Chasers. There's Chevy Chasers out there. You like big, fat, bald men. You know, I really miss DJing because it's like, but I do it now for like just pleasure. Mm-hmm. Because with something about, like I was saying to you, is like, I DJed at my kid's school and, you know, you're playing a Gangnam Style to like 500 kids, half of which are Korean, who are just going nuts in a schoolyard. That's kind of cool.
It's fun.
You know what I mean? There's something about the DJ world where you're playing music that, like, and I had it happen in New York where I would DJ like a booze cruise and a couple would hook up, and next thing you know, like 6 months later, like, we totally want you to come out to Long Island and you have to do our wedding. We met on the booze cruise. If it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for Lady in Red, when you played Lady in Red, Anthony looked at me and he said, I want to marry you. Like, you're my husband. Like, you know, like, it was
game
like,
game over.
And I'm like, wait, I'm going to Long Island to DJ a wedding for a couple that I hooked up over a song.
That is great.
Now, that's where you kind of go, okay, yeah, this is a gig and it's cool. And, you know, we're looking over the Statue of Liberty in a boat and it's sunset. And, like, those are amazing. But then you're like, wow, I actually helped.
You're creating moments.
There's going to be a baby going to be involved. You know what I mean? So the idea is that there's something about being the person who's kind of behind the scenes that does music that affects people. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me was like a kind of, like, once I started to get more acting work, I was like, oh, I can do that same thing here. Just, you know, because at a certain point, the DJ thing, you become a person for hire, and then everybody tries to control which, like, can I make a request? For the fifth time, please play this song now. Play this song now. You know, and I'm like, then the joy of like, wait, just let, just dance. Like, this is my gig, you know?
Right.
So I used to do a thing where, like, I'm the no request DJ, which is like kind of death when somebody's paying you to play music. But there's something like, you want to create those moments and do those things. So I kind of felt like I was losing that sense of being allowed to affect people. Like, read the room, you know, like, these are skills that I use as an actor now, coming in and with producers and things like that, you know, reading the room and going, you know, there's an energy and a pulse here. You need to either pull back or, you know, so, you know, what song would be good is da 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 da. So I think, like, at a certain point, I was like, I needed to transition away from that. And also, the club scene in New York was like, you know, we're talking about the introduction of ecstasy at Limelight. We're talking about, you know, cocaine. I'm watching people's lives being destroyed, you know. So there was that whole, like, I need to kind of get away from that scene and, like, start doing something a little bit more deeper.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, did theater. I did tons and tons of theater. I mean, I easily 3-4 nights a week, I'd be out reading a play for some playwright somewhere. Wow. So, you know, and doing tons of student films, of which some of those guys directed Dude, Where's My Car? And now the director from The Judge is like, I did their student film. So there's something about, you know, transitioning into, now I feel it's like I'm doing a lot of historical characters. Mm-hmm. So there's, the big one for me is Dallas Buyers. And I'll cut a little bit to that because
in arguably one of the best scenes of the film and what I think solidified Jared Leto's Oscar nomination.
He feels that way, and that's what's great is that I'm not plugging that. He's like, no, that scene, I'm the most vulnerable, I'm out of makeup, I have the most to lose. I mean, I'm begging for my life, you know, from you. And so for him, he really felt that was that put him over the top. And what was interesting about that is the kind of tweets and little messages that I get from people. There are people of transgender. There are people who are gay who came out to their parents who have not spoken to their parents since. Mm-hmm. So they were like, you know, I'm buying the DVD and I'm sending it to my father.
Wow.
And you go, okay, this is not just a day at the office. Here is a healing or I'm going to try. Mm-hmm. Your scene is so true and honest to how I envision that I would be talking to my father and or mother that I want to try to have a conversation and reach out. And maybe they will never watch it at all. Maybe they won't. Mm-hmm. But there's something about, like, it takes it, man, it's beyond just amazing movie that they sweat the Oscars. But it's just, it's about, oh my God, there's work. There's a human being that I did, even though I totally don't disagree. I disagree with everything that character is about because that's not who I am. But I represent fathers and or mothers who have disowned and abandoned their own children because they're gay or they're different because they're trying to find if they're a man or they don't know. You know what I mean? But they are who they are. But so I realize that that's a job that I have to do, but to have that kind of profound effect, like I'm having a conversation. And there's a few people that I still interact with that are transgender and just like, you know, your scene was just a little too fucking close to home. I'm sorry, too close to home. close to home because it was really, you know, it's changed them in a way, you know, and it gave them a voice and somebody on the movies that they can go, oh my God, you know, Rayon is me. here's my story. Because you don't see that.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, other than other movies like Transamerica and other movies, or even, you know, even my friend Jill's new show, you know, with Jeffrey Tambor, you know, there's not a, there's, there hasn't been a kind of voice or an image there. So to take it that same intent that I wanted to be able to affect people's life, wow, you know?
Yeah.
It's beyond, incredible. You know, that's like my 50th movie. And I go, well, this is the one that people are going to kind of remember me for, because that scene, everybody knows what it is.
Yeah.
The minute I say it, they'll be like, oh my God, oh, you're the dad. You
know?
Yeah. Just a character.
That's just a character.
I'm a good guy.
Portraying like an event that happens.
Like, I have to represent, you know, those people exist. Don't love their children
but,
for
know,
who they were.
It's just a testament to who you are as an actor and as a performer that you were able to do it so believably.
Thank you, but the hard part is I do run into people who think
that's
you,
real.
That's who you are. And I'm like, you know, come on.
Really?
So you just go and like, go right up in and give them a hug.
Yeah,
and they're like,
I'm like, you know, come on. Hold my hand. Come on, give me a kiss. You know, just something to totally break it down. You know what I mean? Just totally break those barriers down.
Yeah, so a lot of that communicating to your audience, like as you did as a DJ and like what you did as an actor, now you're producing. Are you finding that connection as well?
Well, because now it's like there's a, it's almost like I'm starting my career, like, you know, 112 movies or TV shows in, you know? So there's people who are kind of like, you know, giving me props and attention and things like that. So I think producing now, it's like I'm just starting my new web series, and it's a whole new ball game. But I produced The Cellar Door, which is like a kind of a horror movie, and created this very lovable but confused serial killer, you know, where girls are like, oh, he's just so, he's so confused. And I'm like, no, people. He's a sociopath. He traps women in the cellar and, you know, doesn't feed them till they fall in love with him. Like, I don't think he's going to be... You can fix him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think...
That's not the broken puppy dog you
mess. You can't fix a sociopath like that. Just give it a heads up if there's a guy out there. So, but being able to kind of take the project from idea and creation all the way to the end is kind of amazing, you know? And so I'm venturing in this new territory. I like producing because there's a business. I understand that there's a business, and I have a really good business acumen, and it's helped me to kind of survive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to kind of create, I want to do more of that. There are projects that I'm being attached to, which is kind of an odd thing. Like, I'm meeting with a director tomorrow to officially attach myself to a project. And so it's not an audition, and I'm not, you know, I don't have to. I just sit down and have a meeting with this person, and we start talking about this character that we're going to create.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this collaboration. And so, you know, the idea...
To not have to audition.
I know. I just, trust me. Like,
oh, it's so terrifying.
You go through these phases of, like, you know, I go through, like, you know, I get one offer a year, and then, you know, over since Dallas Buyers, there's, like, you know, more and more kind of offers coming my way. And they're just checking to see if I'm available, and... Do I need to, like, what do I wear? If you're available, and they'll call you, and they'll just book you. And I go, so that's it. I just show up, and
awesome.
I'll meet this person on the set, I guess. And what do I, you know, like, it's a wonderful thing. I've heard about it. It happens.
It's happening now.
And so more and more of those things are, I think are kind of really quite wonderful, you know? And that there's also a testament to the body of work. I think that's another cool thing. Is just like, you know, I'm not a new guy. I can. I'm very capable, and you can look at anything and it'll tell you that I'm going to be pretty truthful and honest and straightforward. And you know, I'm not going. It's going to be 12, 15 hour days. I'm not going to bother you too much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to kind of do my work and be in my trailer. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for that, as opposed to the drama that happens on sets. I hear.
Yeah.
I hear.
Allegedly.
So I've heard.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I'm not going to be part of any of that.
But speaking of drama, tonight's episode.
Yeah. Huh?
For this season, I think it was one of the more visually gruesome.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. I think it was the most we've seen...
She was swinging that axe, boy, and she was not stopping.
And then, like, the cops, they're like, just...
The
blood splattering everywhere.
Everything, starting from the beginning with Jimmy and Stanley and...
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It was hard.
Yeah. Well, this was one of my favorite ones the whole season.
Absolutely one of my favorite ones. Yeah.
And then right next to the one that we were talking about where...
Yeah, 409, himself. The other one too, is where you know, Chiklis is kind of hanging, mm-hmm. you know, about mm-hmm. to hang himself. There seems to be such depth of relationship, and Jimmy's still in this drunken fervor, you know. This one seems like people were literally landing in, and I really love the addition of Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah.
Way to go. Way to go, Ryan Murphy. I mean...
I agree, and you know
really
what
Really great addition.
I was a little apprehensive with him coming onto the show.
Yeah, we spoke about
Not
that
because
one.
Of who he is as a person, but mm-hmm. I felt like bringing him in after this, you know, winter break was sort of just a gimmick to get people to watch the show, and I felt like his character wasn't going to fit. But I was pleasantly surprised.
And I bet the numbers are going to be even better.
Yeah. I think so, too.
So beyond just the kind of, like, stunt casting scenario.
Right.
But also you got to look at his body of work, too. Like,
well, I mean, you know.
You know, you're doing that and you're doing Hedwig on Broadway. You know, there's really not a lot that guy can't do.
No, there isn't. And, I mean, I know Neil has been trying to get on the show, I think, since season one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not...
Success. Way to go, Neil.
You did it.
Rally.
Yeah. And he's really a magician, right?
Really?
He actually does magic.
He's at the Magic Castle all the time.
See, I'm not up on that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, there was the beginning of some award show he was hosting, and it was the coolest opening to an award show I've ever seen. Because he was like, Matt, he was like in the front, then he was in the back. And it was amazing.
Cool. Awesome.
We have to look it up. I will send it to you.
I will. No,
so
I'm,
great.
I want to find out.
Like, I don't even remember the rest of the show. I was just like, this part was amazing.
Oh, that's awesome. I love hearing that.
I don't even know where to start. Someone else talk.
I mean, okay, so the Jimmy and Del thing.
Yeah.
Now, that was not the first time that we saw Del really be fatherly, but mm-hmm. this was just, it took the cake. He was feeding him for the first
Absolutely.
Time. He was like, you know, I know a guy who doesn't have hands, and he's a chef now, and...
Right.
He chops and dices, and there's
hope for you, son.
But because they were having that connection, like I was like, oh, it's over for him.
Yeah,
I knew I was.
You really thought that?
Yeah, I thought the same thing too. I was like, they finally had that father and son moment. He goes, oh, he's dead.
I didn't think that at all.
Keeping Jimmy.
Didn't even cross my mind.
No, I thought for sure the minute he was feeding him, and then he was talking about, oh, that's funny. You feel like you felt like a freak because you were normal. And I was like, I was like, oh, he's going.
Bye.
Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, Vic.
Good call there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you didn't think that was coming?
No, it didn't even cross my mind because all I kept thinking was, you know, Jimmy went to God knows where Stanley brought him to who knows where to cut his hands off.
Right.
And the only thing I can think of is that Jimmy's going to get an infection in his hands because, you know... We didn't see them get removed,
right.
but we know
right.
that they did get removed, and now he's in the hospital. There's gonna definitely.
But you know, earlier episodes we saw that both hands in a jar.
Yeah.
We knew both were gonna be gone.
Ma Petite as well. So there's been a lot of like tip offs that are kind of like hello, if you're really watching, and you guys are watching. You know, if you're really watching, you're going to see a little bit of these things. But there's something about that longing for the father and son connection
mm-hmm.
that, like, we kept going around it. It's like, remember how magnets don't sometimes, mm-hmm. when
yes.
they go the opposite, it's like,
when
you're going
like
around,
the,
you're going around, and it never...
Negative and negative.
But it's been like that pretty much the whole season, if you really look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, just as the minute their connection is like, the minute they can two can be on the same page, I'm like, we got to just rip this apart. That's part of the heartbreak of... And I think Ryan's done an amazing job this season, I have to say. And I've said it before in other things, is that bringing real humanity mm-hmm. to the freak show, and then also turning it on its edge by going, no, we're the freaks.
Right.
They're born just like this, and we alter ourselves.
Yeah.
They're just like this. So maybe we are the freaks. So there's something about, I just like how he's brought a real depth of humanity to each of the characters. That, you know, through the whole season. And bringing in Neil Patrick Harris is like, this is a nice kind of like, what's going to happen? You know?
We got two more to go.
The last three, it's like, you know, we're building up to some stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But that exact there where you're saying that the freaks are the normal ones and the normal people are the freaks. And that's what, when Bette and Dot are like writing in their diary and they're saying, like, these people are happy. Because they accept it and they're seeking pleasure and let's go do it.
That's right.
That's so right. Then they really went and tried to do it.
Speaking of Bette and Dot.
Speaking of Bette and Dot.
My goodness. Uh-huh. They're on a mission to get deflowered.
To get laid.
Like, chicken wax.
Hey, when a girl wants it.
Make it happen. She shaves her legs. It's on. You're all laughing because you all.
Because it's real.
Ladies, you know what I'm
That's
talking
real.
About.
Yeah. Of the show in the credits, there's the babies. I think they're babies that are like playing with themselves, the conjoined babies.
Oh, yeah.
So it's something that I've been waiting to happen to see how it's going to happen because I've been thinking the entire time, okay, we have the conjoined twins, we have these like weird conjoined doll babies that are.
So you see the doll babies and you're thinking menage a trois, like boom, that's
no,
where you're going.
I'm thinking like, you know, well, eventually they're going to want to have sex and...
Right.
Something that they're going to need to explore their sexuality.
Right, but I was assuming it was going to be something they were going to do on their own.
Right, because they said that, oh, they had not experienced an orgasm or like one of them did not understand what an orgasm was.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure about their physiology.
Anybody relate to that out there? Anybody?
Tweet at James.
He wants to know.
Well, it seemed like when they were having sex with Chester, Bette was in pain, but Dot was enjoying herself.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So we do know that they have one vagina, but they feel it differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so
well, then, like, there's, like, different people have different tolerance of pain. So, like, that could be attributed to that.
Okay.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody out there conjoined twins?
I don't know. That's my theory.
Right? Tweet us out at conjoined twin orgasm. Hashtag. Yeah.
Speaking of, we had our other host last night on our Forever After show us a picture of a guy who has...
Two functional penises.
Very interesting.
Wow.
I'm still scarred.
Yeah. I think the three breasts alone, which will be a good segue into Desiree.
Yeah.
There was a couple of things on TV of these women who, like, went out and got three.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
So I'm like going.
That woman that was on the news, it turned out she did have a breastplate.
Yeah.
Like a silicone breastplate that I think kind of similar to what Angela Bassett is wearing on the show that it wasn't
right.
Oh, so
real.
It's fake.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, gosh. Desperate for attention there.
Yeah.
A fake third breast.
I don't know why you would.
I mean, hey, we're talking about it now, so I guess mission accomplished for her, right?
Mission accomplished.
Spoiler alert.
Check off for her to get talked about on After Buzz TV podcast.
I think we have that on the three breasted gal.
When Desiree and Maggie come back from where we ended last episode, they come back from the museum.
They bring Ma Petite.
They bring Ma Petite.
Bring her back.
Why didn't they bring Jimmy's hands?
I don't know.
That's an easier thing to carry.
Well, we had to get rid of the hands first in order to bring them back. You had to get rid of Ma Petite in order to bring her back.
That's true.
So you gotta.
Maybe next episode.
But there's two of them.
I know, but there's two of them.
There's two of them, and I'd be like the hands or the head. Whose head was there? Someone's
Meeps,
head.
Right?
No.
Somebody else's head. You're right.
It's Peppa's husband.
Salty.
Yeah, Salty's
head.
Salty head.
That would have been easier to bring back. The hands would have been easier to bring back.
But, Muppet, it's dramatic.
It is very dramatic. And
I mean, I guess it all would have been dramatic, but... I don't know. I liked your story about you and the actress that plays Ma Petite. And just that, how she's so wonderful.
Like, I was at the rap party for American Horror Story in New Orleans, and you know, I just couldn't keep my eyes off her. And it's just like she deals with this all the time, and she's like, I hate people trying to get out of touch herself. So I got the memo that, you know, like when you see Ma Petite, just
don't walk up to her.
You know what
I
mean? Don't pet her and, you know, try to hold her and pick her up like a little. But you're looking at this precious doll, like the little fingernails and the eyelashes. And then she has these like the kind of bigger shoes, but she's on a little table, you know, and so it was just, you know.
Yeah, but even like personality wise,
comes
off of her.
She's a beaming light, you know. It's just these beautiful, positive, and her smile is these big teeth, you know, and she's just gorgeous.
Yeah.
And so it's just like you kind of can't not watch her for a while. So at a certain point, I just, to not creep her out, you know, I'm at the bar, and there's alcohol involved, folks. So, you know, I'm at the bar, and I'm just kind of just enamored and kind of watched. So at a certain point, I went over and I introduced myself, and she knew. And Chiklis and I had gone to college together, so I said I'm really close friends with Chiklis, and she goes, "Oh, I like Michael, you know." But I'm like, "You like the guy that suffocated you? Okay, that's cool. What's not to like about Chiklis?" But so you know, she was very, very sweet. But there's something about her that's just radiant light.
Oh,
you know
I love what I mean? That.
Really yeah. radiant light, and that's one of the beautiful things. We've talked about this before. Is mm-hmm. that lead up the lead up of this whole season of introducing us to the freaks and their story, like this little mini bio of who they are, really, really did the job of us being emotionally connected to each mm-hmm. of them. Mm-hmm. You know, and when they're gone, they're like, oh man, you know. So it's a job well done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean. Still two more to go.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're running out of freaks.
Yeah, but they brought in a new one. So can we talk about Chester?
Yeah,
let's talk about Chester. Let's talk about Chester.
Yeah. Chester and Marjorie.
And Marjorie. Okay. Oh my gosh.
I don't know that I'd call him a freak.
Just crazy.
I think he's just crazy.
Is he dandy crazy?
Dandy's not crazy.
Okay.
But I think Dandy's misunderstood.
Slightly misunderstood.
You can fix it.
Because I saw
he's sociopath.
He's totally fixable. Nah.
I saw a parallel. This kind of naive, boyish, just really... Yeah, I would say boyish.
Okay.
You know?
I would say the difference between Dandy and Chester is that Dandy was born the way he was. And I think Chester...
Degraded to that.
Sort of something that happened
like
traumatic.
The war.
Yeah, led him to this traumatic stress, you know.
Well, yeah, could you imagine you went to war and your wife falls in love with another woman and, like, homegirl doesn't move out.
It's not uncommon.
Yeah, but they still kept him around.
You join in. I'm like, I don't care
what
period
it is.
That sounds like a good deal. You know, you're in the trenches with a whole bunch of men.
But they didn't involve him. They didn't involve him.
Yeah, no, they tried.
They tried to bring him in. He's like, I got this. I like put my hands up this girl's skirt. Mm. You know, this puppet skirt. So
I mean, I guess
weird.
It was
so
weird. Sort of a coping mechanism for him. I guess mm-hmm. after the
like
war,
his comfort
he took
blanket.
Up this ventriloquist doll, which nothing's creepier.
It's
I don't know why.
Yeah, it's Chucky's sister. It's like, how can you not be creeped about it?
It's so
and she
bizarre.
Was so well done, and I love the tie-in.
I love Jamie Brewer.
Yeah, Jamie Brewer tie-in. I'm like, as soon as I saw Jamie Brewer, I was like, and then you called it. You called it immediately. You called it from the voice. Yeah.
Oh, no, that was you. That was
like,
you.
Yeah. I was like, whoa.
Abigail.
It's Abigail.
I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah.
I didn't want to ruin it for anyone else.
Oh, no. You were like.
I said it in my head.
Yeah, visually aloud. She was like, I got this one. Yeah. I know where this is going. It was beautiful. Great.
It was. I mean, I was kind of surprised that they showed us how he sees Marjorie.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which I thought was more interesting because he sees her as a real girl.
Oh, yeah. Which is why I love even like Elsa's response of like going, you mean you're dummy? And you're like, right. You know, what's he's shut up. I got cold cut here. Like, this guy's crazy. Like, he'll kill people like this. I was like, don't be talking about your crazy little wooden doll. And he's like, you don't understand who she is and what she is to me. I love that kind of stuff. That's why I put him in the freak category, for sure.
Okay.
Because of his perception and how he deals with her, mm-hmm. he's definitely in the freak category. Crazy, you know, that's asylum. I mean, but this is freak show. He's got he's got serious damaged issues that I think really put him in the, you know, he's well welcome in the group.
Now, would you think that his issues began before he killed his wife and her lover, or got worse because of that? Because he blames that murder on the doll.
Right. So, yeah, it had to have been bad before he killed them.
Do you think?
Yeah, because what would push him to kill his wife and...
That relationship.
But to kill like that, like... bash their heads in.
I mean, I don't know.
I loved how fascinated Dandy was with it, though. He's like,
yeah.
But how did they die?
Yeah, like, fill
he's
me
like,
in.
What
like,
a sicko.
Yeah, he's like,
like, that's... for Dandy to call somebody a sicko.
Oh, yeah, I'm like, dude, pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's all just have a bath of blood. Why don't we?
Why not?
Yeah.
It's not the first time we've seen it.
No, I think there's something you said about this. It goes back to something I like to approach in terms of character work, is that I always try to find what's called the Achilles heel. Try to find that inciting incident, the wound that never heals, the horrific or maybe not so horrific, but was it abandonment? What, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What's the germ or the seed that led to that kind of behavior?
Right.
And I think that, you know, the writing is so good in the show that there's all, just when you think you understand that inciting incident, there's something else. There's this trigger or this domino effect that kind of happens. Like, oh, well, that's what leads him to that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? You know, Del being the son of all these freaks, and then the fact that at that time him being gay is he considers freakdom, you know, and I'm like, wow, that's another beautiful kind of, you know, message that's, you know, throughout the season mm-hmm. is that mm-hmm. just when you think you understand the inciting incident or the germ of their thing, there's mm-hmm. another trigger or another effect of it that goes farther. You know, I think this year, beyond all years, because Asylum was the hardest year for me to watch. I've watched every episode.
I agree.
Because, and Chiklis and I talk about this time, like, just the idea of crazy, like, just unfettered, no boundary thing, that is a deep, dark area for me.
It's terrifying.
You know, this, but even with this season, I felt like just when he's gone too far, I'm like, wow. Okay, that was on the air? Like, that. Like we just went a step further. And I think that's the nature of where we're at right now. We're in like this pioneer of television where the boundaries can go far beyond mm-hmm. what sensors and things mm-hmm. of like, you know, we're adults. You know, you're giving me the warning of what's happening mm-hmm. in this particular episode. There's going to be violence.
Yeah,
there's
going
to
be TV.
And I love that they're willing to take the risk.
You're taking the risk. And look, there's some things where I'm kind of conservative about this because I have a teenager, I have a 13-year-old and an 11-year-old. And I watch stuff before to go, okay, this is or is not. You know, I can go, we're going to speed through this thing because this is just not appropriate for you to watch, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think that what's beautiful now is that we're in this creative world where we have these outlets where people can pick and choose make their own decisions about, I want to see that kind of show, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's kind of amazing. And I think Ryan's really one of the main people that is really pushing the envelope of what let us decide. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's not a matter. I mean, I don't know if there are people who are going, oh, we're definitely not. We're going to ban this show or we're going to try to shut it down. I don't see that happening.
No.
And I think what a great benchmark of kind of what's happening in our society now.
Yeah.
You know, I know some people are like, oh, you know, that's a terrible thing. But I feel the exact opposite is that all art should be an opening up of all human behavior and all its beauty and ugliness and everything else in between.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, we're getting to understand the world of the freaks that I didn't know much. You know, I know what I thought I knew from documentaries and other things I've seen, you know, but this has been an amazing kind of season in terms of opening up the conversation of, you know, what is it? What is a freak, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before going into this season, did you watch the documentary you did?
Uh-huh.
Did you like it?
I did, but I like Gummo. I mean, like, I like offbeat stuff, mm-hmm. you know? And there's a reality show, the freaks that are on Venice Boulevard. So my kids and I, we watched that, you know, and there was actually some people from that show that ended up on the season, you know, mm-hmm. one of the tallest man, mm-hmm. African American, he ended up like, I ended up seeing him on like his head open, busted open. He didn't have any lines, but like he was on set and I was like, hey, we watch you, you know, and I'm like, I'm a fan of the freaks, you know, like here, I'm an actor who works with Oscar, but I'm a fan of the freaks, you know, so there's a wonderful thing, and I've gotten to become friends with like Matt Fraser, you know, and Naomi and I are, you know, like and Finn. I mean, we're building relationships with it because, you know, you're around 16, 18 hours, mm-hmm. you know, with each other. And Amazon Eve, you know, like.
And most people aren't in a position where they're around someone long enough to make a real connection.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And also just like I'm not coming to the show. I'm not paying money to see you perform like a seal.
Mm-hmm.
We're contemporaries. Yeah. We are working mm-hmm. together on a show. Even though I got to say, if Amazon Eve pushes my head in her breast one more time, you know who you are because you're in Europe now. You're not watching. You might be watching, but she's every single time. It's like me and Colcut. She's just like,
oh my gosh!
Look, I'm 6'9", and I was like, yeah. But there's something wonderful about. And particularly Matt and I become, because we have a mutual friend who did New York. He did some New York theater, and we become good friends. And there's just something wonderful about our connection to the show because we're actors. At the end of the day, we're actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's what I think what Ryan's really doing a great job of, mm-hmm. of just kind of like every, we're all, you know, we're all freaks in some form or another, but yeah, let's all bond absolutely. That way, you know?
I love it.
Yeah, I kind of love that too.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that we've been saying here for a long time.
You all freaks?
We're all freaks. Just how you show it.
That, right? How you show it and how deeply committed are you to letting it show.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all in denial about it. It's like, yeah, well, you know, we all got an inner freak going on. Everybody. So.
Hey, I'm the first one to admit it.
There it is.
Yeah.
That's halfway. You're halfway there.
Yeah.
Del and Desiree. Should we talk about Del and Desiree? Like, that was kind of...
We can, yeah.
But
it was, you know... I'm shocked that Desiree knew mm-hmm. about... Del's homosexuality.
Women aren't stupid, right?
Yeah.
And she's a really smart woman.
Women know their men.
I know.
Yeah.
And she was like, all right, you know.
But she was married to him. She, you know, she went along with it. Mm-hmm. She sort of upheld the lie.
Right. But she's got three breasts, and she's also got a little something down there, too. You know what I mean?
Enlarged clitoris.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
so you think this one was a little odd because you felt that she was surprised in who he was, that she knew he was?
No, I mean, I was surprised mm-hmm. that she knew more about him than she had let on previously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised that she would, you know, allow Elsa to shoot him in the head.
What's interesting here is that, and I'll go back to this because I remember my first episode, which was 403, and Colcutt makes this comment about, we heard about you, what you did to those people in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
You know, Del has been capable of murder.
Yes.
Previous to this. So there was something that, to me, rung a little bit true and a little bit untrue in terms of Desiree's surprise of, like, you did this, or I was getting the feeling like, like, you know, you committed that you, when we left Chicago, you committed you wouldn't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now you've done it, but not you just not just done it to defend us or to get out of town or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're doing it to us. Like,
yeah.
You're,
yeah.
That's what stung. And that's why I think she would actually allow something like that to happen.
Yeah, right. The anger was that you did this to one of our own.
That's right.
Because she, when she was with the girl who's the con artist. What's mm-hmm. her name?
Emma Roberts.
And she's like, if I find out that you killed our people, like, you're gone.
Yeah.
But, like, so she's Mama Bear. She's...
No, for sure.
You know, that's sure. what hurt. And then whoever did it was going to pay.
And yeah. what I love is she's kind of taking over the role of the Mama Bear that the Kathy Bates, you know, once Kathy Bates' character's gone. Mm-hmm. Because she was the really kind of the moral compass.
She really was.
You know? And then once she's gone... You know, who's Elsa? You know what I mean?
Don't trust that girl.
Elsa's out
for Elsa.
Elsa. Yeah.
That's
so,
right.
You know, like, we saw her packing tonight, so.
Right.
Right.
She's ready to go.
She's coming to Hollywood.
Watch out.
Oh, yeah. She'll fit in fine.
Yeah, she really
Well, we know from the flash forward of a couple weeks ago that she does eventually make it.
She does make it. Yeah. She's on Life magazine.
Yeah. Oh,
on the cover.
My God.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's the last episode.
It could be. It could be.
It's a photo shoot.
For life.
Yeah, she's like, you know, like a little loose. And she's like on the beach with a little ball. And
oh, my
little,
God.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, a lot of the seasons have ended with interviews.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So season...
Two ended.
And three. Ended in, like, a television interview.
Yeah.
Season one didn't, but two and three did, so I mean...
So we'll see if four does. Maybe with Elsa.
With
That's
Elsa.
Yeah.
So, it's like, it would be like the early E! True Hollywood story.
Yes.
You know, tell us, Elsa, how did you lose your legs and run a freak show?
It was a dark night in Germany.
Yes, exactly. I want to talk about Dandy for a second, because Dandy's been such a huge, huge, heavy... You know, run in this entire season.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode's like, all right, but Neil, you can take all the stuff now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Dandy's been so set up for such things. This was I was a little disappointed because I really felt like it's, you know, we needed to introduce Chester. I got that. But I mean, where Dandy's going, where we want Dandy to go, who knows? You know
right,
what I mean?
And we only have two episodes to do it.
I know.
So.
I know. So I felt a little Dandy cheated a little this week.
I feel like we'll get him.
You know,
in predictions, we'll see.
I'm certainly hoping that that's the case. I know that there was, I love that kind of, and that actor was talking about, J.D. Evermore, you know, bringing information about, it seemed like there was like, he was making a play to buy the freak show, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, I was surprised that didn't happen.
Yeah, because I'm like, dude, you know, you just offer somebody $1 million to go kill Precious. And that happens, and and we're good to go.
He turns into a private investigator, or does he?
No, it's a different character.
Oh, that's a different character.
Yeah, he's a different character. Because Kultik came back again. He, you know, was in this episode, and so. My phone was, it's working.
It's on. It's shattered, but it's on.
Whenever he shows up, I should be right there. Just saying, next season, you owe me one. So that was a different detective. That was a private investigator that Dandy had hired to get information about the freaks.
Okay, that's right.
And I think it was in order to kind of find his wedge or leverage into purchasing the freak show.
Yeah.
Because he said, you know, they were going to be mine. You know, it's like the one thing that Dandy can't have, which I think is great. I like that idea of it. But you're kind of going, but for a guy that's been able to get everything, I just find it hard to believe that you can't.
It's only a
matter
of time.
You can't buy that freak show?
Yeah, he could
have sold it.
It's only a matter of time.
That's right.
Now, he's going to take him in a different way because, you know, he says he's a god.
That's
so
right.
He's just going to manipulate his way in because maybe that's more fun for him.
Or they're just going to turn that whole lake into blood, and everybody's going to jump in.
And they're going to swim.
Fun.
So now we got. Now, unfortunately, Del's gone.
Del's gone.
Not going to be coming back. Who else is gone? Is Twisty coming back?
No.
Come on, bring back some Twisty.
Who else died?
Pepper's gone, but Pepper's not dead, gone. But just gone. She's not coming back.
But no. Yeah. Who else?
Ma Petite. Salty.
Salty.
I think that's.
We still have Amazon Eve. We still have, you know, Matt, Flipper Boy. Like, so, you know, like...
Where did the lizard girl go?
Penny?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, she's not around.
She's very forgettable.
Yeah.
I hate
all
to
that
say
camouflage.
That, but she is so forgettable.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
But, you know, the one twist I did like this week is I love when Evan's coming out of, like, his, you know, the euphoria of, like, you know, what's going on. And she's like, oh, no, you know, I was at the...
Oh, the
I was
nurse.
At the Tupper party. Mm-hmm. Tupperware party. I like that little tie-in because I was like, she was like, I was like, you know, you can go a lot farther with that, but there's only so much time.
Right.
But that lovely little like, oh, you're tied up and you killed my friends.
And Jupiter's a small town.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, everybody would know.
Oh, for sure.
I'm really feeling for Jimmy, though.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, he lost his mom. He lost his dad. He lost his hands.
Yeah.
I mean, he is as like rock bottom as it can get.
But each season...
It's becoming
evidently aware, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. Evan Peters is amazing.
Yeah, he's a rock star.
He's an amazing actor. You've watched from season one, like talk about like you know taking a growth
In season one where he's shooting up the school, like that whole episode. Oof. I was like, this guy has got it.
Yeah,
like,
the goods,
just
man.
Go yeah. do it. Do anything you want.
Couldn't happen to a nicer person, you know? I love it. And I didn't, like, I'm the last to know these things because I don't delve into people's things. And then Emma Roberts, like, you know, them on set and off set, there's just that great kind of, and I was like, yeah, you guys got a good thing going. You know, and they're like, yeah, like, duh. Like, and I was like, because I don't really delve into people. Yeah. But it's like, there's this lovely chemistry. I wish there was some more of that. You know, I like that relationship at all. And Dennis O'Hare, I mean, he can do anything.
Gosh,
he really,
he's great.
You know, I hung out with him a little bit in Dallas Buyers, and just what a wonderful person. But, like, again, another creepy, weird, like, last season in Coven. I mean, like,
the tongue.
You know, he's just...
He was able to do so much without saying anything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because he's amazing. But this thing, just the lovely, you know, he could talk anybody into anything, which is quite lovely. So, I don't know, this has been a kind of a, you know... I'm getting kind of sick.
Because it's almost over.
I wasn't going to cry.
Speaking of Dennis O'Hara, I'm going to jump into news and gossip.
Yeah, here we go.
Do we have any?
After Buzz TV news.
Jessica Lange has confirmed that she's not returning for season 5.
I know.
Wow. Just kidding.
She is not returning, but Dennis O'Hara
That's
is.
Devastating.
Good.
Oh, that's good.
Yes.
Wow.
Wait, what?
But Jessica Lange?
What news source did you get this
from?
Yeah,
I want to find out a new source because we talked a little bit before.
Yeah.
I have some
Can
sources.
We call Jessica Lange right now?
We're not that close.
Oh.
I'll see her at the Golden Globes, so maybe I'll talk to her.
Ask her.
These are the very devastated females that
because
need to
there was
know.
Talk that there was talk about that it would stay in New Orleans. She does have a place in New Orleans. There was talk that she would stick around. So I thought that might be a possibility.
I'm so sad.
Me sad.
Yeah, no.
But you know, we
anything can happen.
Say never.
Anything can happen.
I mean, yeah. You never know. I mean, but she did say that she didn't want to do it after season 4.
She did. She did.
Yeah. Sticking to her word.
To move on to different things.
But Kathy Bates, I think, will come back. That's my prediction.
Probably. Hopefully.
Yeah, because she really likes the concept and idea that each year people can be something different. Mm-hmm. So I'm feeling that she's coming back. Evan's definitely coming back. Why would not come back?
It's No, I love it because it's like you've got a company or a theater troupe and you like keep going, you do a new production.
There is definitely like a theater like this where there is a kind of like that... what are we going to be this year? You know, what's on the boards this
year? What are they
going to
put me on? Summer stock.
Yeah, this year we're doing King Lear, and then we're also doing a lovely farce.
See this? So, this other news source is also saying that Sarah Paulson is not returning.
Okay, if that happens, I'm not watching anymore.
Now that one I know.
You say that.
I'll have to confirm the other one. But I know that Jessica Lange is not coming back. Everyone's reporting.
I should just text Sarah now.
Please,
she's
going to
sleep though, right?
Yeah, she's probably sleeping. And she's in Atlanta time. I think she's being Marsha Clark right now. So got to leave her alone.
That's the only news that I have, so we can jump into predictions.
Wow.
Predictions.
All right. Oh, snap.
And now, you're
out. Yeah, welcome to. Flash you back to 54.
Yep.
So.
Oh.
Okay, I predict that Dandy and Chester are going to have some sort of face-off, like a mad duel.
To the death?
Yeah.
That's what I'm
saying. One of them's going to die, you know.
Yes. What if the
Chester twins are going to be in there?
Because of the puppet.
Mm. Yeah, because of the puppet or the twins, the jealousy of that.
Them.
But something with them too, it's going down.
Okay.
We have two episodes to make it happen.
Right.
Mary Lou.
Are you not allowed to give predictions because you actually know things?
I know some things.
You know some things? Okay.
Don't give any
as Robert De Niro says, I know a thing or two about a thing or two.
Oh,
yeah.
Exactly.
Betty does.
But I sworn to secrecy.
So. Yes. So
because of crazy twists that have happened in previous seasons, I would love it if Marjorie actually was a paranormal doll.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And listen, aliens showed up.
Right, that's true.
Right. And then, weird stuff happens.
Weird stuff does happen.
Yeah.
I
don't know if that'll happen, but, I don't know. All right, cool.
I think I can, add some predictions that I don't know about.
Okay.
That I would like to see.
Okay.
And I think I'm missing my Twisty, man. I think you got to bring him back. I think I'm missing Mondrake and Twisty.
Mm.
I really am.
Mondrake
was
incredible. That was such a good character.
It was a great character, but I gotta tell you, and on set, when you're talking to him, and then he turns around and you see the face, in person, it's creepier.
Gosh. Terrifying.
Because you're and he's like, hey, he goes, and he didn't think of it, and I was like, oh, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry, man. He turns back around. He goes, I should have gave you, fine, it's whatever. We're going to have dinner, what I mean? He's got the face on. But, I'm hoping there's a little, I'm hoping that the, 13, there's a little, it's the, as we say in the music, the musical, there's a 10 o'clock show. And then there's the finale.
Yes.
Where everybody comes back. So I'm hoping Twisty comes back and Mondrake in a kind of a afterlife scenario, which would be cool. And maybe some musical number with them. I don't know.
We haven't seen a musical number in a long
time. You got Neil Patrick Harris coming off of Hedwig. So I'm thinking anybody's doing prediction. If anybody's doing a musical number, it's Neil Patrick Harris.
Vocal cord.
13 is up.
Predicting David Burka is getting the musical number.
Now, where was he in this episode?
Because he was
He's in 13 and 14, right?
He's in the last episode.
Okay, so 14. Okay.
Neil got two episodes.
Okay.
Yeah. David got one.
Gotcha.
Oh, my gosh.
So he's in next.
I think he's in the final episode.
I think because I thought I saw him on IMDb today that he was in there, but I didn't see him in this episode.
I didn't see him in this episode.
No.
Creeping in the back somewhere.
Mm. I mean, maybe he was in the background. But.
Yeah. Sorry, David.
Just an extra that day.
There's a lot of quick cuts in there. We can't catch everybody.
But my prediction is Dandy's killing Chester next week.
Ugh.
To get rid of him and then buying the freak show.
Nice.
I feel like Dandy's got to die. He's bad.
Dandy's never going to die.
He'll live forever. He's God.
Right?
He's God. I am God.
Yeah.
He's above the law.
He's above the law.
But who's going to go next? Who's next?
Who's next to die?
Amazon Eve is in?
No. Amazon Eve is staying.
She can kick some ass.
Yeah,
you know.
She's definitely staying. And her and Del teaming up, strong man, strong woman, they're not... I mean, she...
Well, not anymore.
Delved
not anymore.
It. But, I feel like she was stronger than him anyway.
I feel like Stanley's going to die.
Oh,
somehow.
Yeah.
He
That might be good.
Not a good guy.
And you know who I think is going to do it?
Who? Jimmy.
It'll be Desiree. Because if she can, if she can go as close as if she's going to protect everybody, and she realizes that he's at the source of this.
Oh, he's going down,
yeah,
honey.
Yeah, he's going down big time.
For sure.
And it's going to be sassy and amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be Tina Turner all like,
only
what's love got to do with it? I will take you out, brother. She's awesome.
She just directed
The Whitney Houston
biopic for Lifetime.
Yeah, is that already out? Did you guys watch it?
Not yet.
It's not out yet. No. And when I started seeing the billboards for it, I was a little upset. I was like, it's too soon.
Though, I think it's this week. I think we're talking this week.
I think. Maybe it is this week.
Yeah. Tonight is Empire. It's the premiere of Empire. Yes. So, but, that's, I think Desiree is going to be the one to take Stanley out. Because if she realizes that he's the one.
Totally.
It's done. Because even if she's like, oh, you know, no, you're doing this, and not realizing that there's somebody, the puppeteer behind it all, he's going
down. I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it too.
I think Jimmy's going to prevail. I think Jimmy's going to run. He's going to be the last man standing.
I hope so.
And he's going to take that freak show all the way to
with
Hollywood,
his new prosthetic hands.
That's right. Fingers and toes.
Well, why don't we let everyone know where they can find you out there in the social media world?
The media.
Start with me.
If you're gonna, I'm at Twitter, James K. Dumont, and I have an open Facebook page.
Oh,
I have a little fan page, but I really like, you know, Chicklis has a fan page. Like,
yes,
not a fan page, but I really like, it's open. So I'm on Facebook.
Awesome.
All right. Awesome.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mary Lou Mandel, which is MarieLouMandl. And also please check out my new show, Roommate Horror Story, which is inspired by American Horror Story. Put it out tonight. Hope you guys like it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Nice. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Pegarad. And also I do the Forever After Show on Tuesdays.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at You Can Call Me Skiff. So from everyone here at the AfterBuzz TV studios, we want to thank James for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here. That's
and
awesome.
You guys for tuning in. So we'll see you all next week.
You've been buzzed.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.